This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The U.S. reimposed sanctions on Iran overnight. Iran's government is asking its population to work around them. I'm David Brancaccio in New York at Iran's Mehrabad Airport right now. You can see the new U.S. sanctions in action. Five brand new 70-seat turboprop passenger planes built by an Italian-French consortium had landed just ahead of the sanctions deadline. President Trump tweeted this morning that the new sanctions are about world peace. The European Union is fighting this. Amir Paivar is on the line from London. He's a business correspondent with the BBC's Persian Language Service. Iran's central bank is moving to cushion the effect of the U.S. sanctions, some of which were enacted at midnight U.S. Eastern Time.
Right now, the government cannot transact in U.S. dollar cash. Now they're telling the people, it's your turn, go and do it for us. Go and import precious metals. Go, if you can, get your hand on U.S. dollars. And you're more than welcome to go and purchase these and bring them to the country. Because we, as the government, are now under sanctions. But you guys, if you do it, you probably won't be on U.S. Treasury's radar.
Oh, so essentially, Iranian people, do some U.S. sanctions busting ad hoc if you can.
Yes, indeed. It's some sort of outsourcing the areas which are now the government cannot handle to the private sector or whatever you call it. But Iran has experienced this before. Between 2010 and 2013, we were going through the same process. But what it ended up being was an opportunity for those close to the regime for rent-seeking, for corruption, because if you get your hand on gold, precious metals that the government itself cannot import, then you're in the position to sell it at any price you want. Or if you have the right connections within the government, then you get your hand on U.S. dollars, and again, you do whatever you want with them.
BBC business correspondent Amir Paivar, who does the Persian service. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The average African-American woman in America had to work all of last year and from New Year's until today to make the same amount of money as the average white guy did in 2017 alone. More than seven extra months of work. Pay equality advocates have labeled this August 7th as Black Women's Equal Pay Day. Marketplace's Jed Kim has more.
Black women earn on average 63 cents for every dollar a white man does. So higher education and more experience should help close that gap, right? Mallory Wilson is with the Economic Policy Institute.
Even with that adjusted measure of the pay gap, we still find that African-American women earn only 66 cents on the dollar.
The gap has widened in the past 20 years. Typically, tight labor markets have been times for communities of color to make gains, but wages have remained pretty much flat. Some are calling for policy changes to close the gap. Sharmila Majmudar is with the Chicago-based advocacy group Women Employed. They want laws to stop hirers from asking about pay history.
When their wages are determined based on past salary history, it just compounds that gender wage gap moving forward.
Equal pay days for Native American and Hispanic women have yet to arrive. They'll fall on September 27th and November 1st, respectively. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
I want to check the live market screens here. The 100-share index in London is up 0.8%. Dow and Nasdaq futures are each up 0.3%. The Turkish currency's been plunging amid inflation fears and the worry there that the economy in Turkey might be in for what they call a hard landing. The country's strongman leader is also a vocal critic of higher interest rates. The Turkish lira stabilized a bit today after falling more than 5% since the start of this young month. It's at 5.3 to the dollar now. Now, I realize it's a bit soul-crushing to stumble across a one out-of-season Christmas store this time of year. Now, that said, we need to talk Christmas as part of a teachable moment about where our Christmas comes from. The answer, to a large extent, is China. Right about now is when businesses place their wholesale orders for holiday decorations, including a lot of stuff you put on the tree. The city of Yiwu, near Shanghai, is a major manufacturing center for the holiday stuff. The U.S. has not imposed tariffs on these products so far, but Chinese exporters are worried about the trade tensions, as Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak reports from Yiwu.
The international wholesale market in Yiwu is massive, almost 2 square miles in size. Picture 280 Macy's stores combined. A whole floor is dedicated to hair clips, another to flowers, and on the second level, rows of Christmas trees, Santa suits, and plastic reindeer. 90% of imported Christmas ornaments and lights in the U.S. come from China, according to recent U.S. government figures. Jiang Yuelan sells plastic Santas and other decorations in bulk. She says despite the trade tensions, she's still getting steady orders from the U.S. and Europe. So far, her products aren't subject to tariffs, but she knows they could be. That's worrying, she says, at a time when her costs are going up. The recycled plastic pellets she needs to make her decorations have been more expensive since China stopped accepting shipments of waste plastic from foreign countries earlier this year.
For a while, the price of plastic pellets fluctuated by the day.
Many suppliers say their profit margins are small. If the U.S. does impose a tariff of 10 or 25% on Christmas decorations, that will be passed on to consumers. Even products that are not subject to tariffs can be affected by the current U.S.-China trade dispute. Qiwang Textile exports more than 100,000 flags to the U.S. every month. The firm's owner, Wu Yuepei, says U.S. Customs recently held up one of her shipments for days. She thinks the U.S. is scrutinizing all Chinese products more closely now. It is a sensitive time for Chinese manufacturers. Another flag maker, who will only give her surname Liu for fear of government retaliation, says she doesn't put Made in China labels inside her U.S.-bound products anymore. She says that didn't go far enough for one customer, who requested American flags with Made in the USA labels. She says she declined the order. In Yiwu City, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Our producers are Michael Lipkin, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.